News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 20th of April, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can lose, things to choose, a new pair of shoes.
The webcam is live this week.
Yeah, I called, believe it or not, I called this past week and they didn't know it or they were unaware of it.
No one else.
I called last week, nobody had called to look. So they, we'll look into it.
And there it is.
I
don't even know how they got it on a 1 hour delay. I mean, how do you do that accidentally? All right, fine, whatever.
It just hung for an hour and then fixed itself. Sometimes things that break themselves will fix themselves.
That's right. And if you procrastinate long enough, it'll either fix itself or it will no longer matter. Microsoft operating systems run most personal computers around the globe and are a cash cow for the world's largest software maker. But you'd never confuse a Windows user with the passionate fans of Mac OS X. Or even the free Linux operating system, unless it's someone running Windows XP, a version Microsoft wants to retire. Fans of the six-year-old operating system, which is set to be pulled off store shelves in June, have papered the internet with blog posts, cartoons, and petitions recently. They trumpeted superiority to Vista, whose consumer launch last January was greeted with, at best, lukewarm reviews. No matter how hard Microsoft works to persuade people to embrace Vista, some just can't be wowed. They complain about Vista's hefty hardware requirements, it's less than peppy performance, occasional incompatibility with other programs and devices, and frequent irritating security pop-up windows. Somebody did a study, and it turns out that the Vista deny allow thing that comes up constantly, it has in fact trained people to ignore those pop-ups.
Yep. They just click OK, click OK, click OK.
Yep. For them, the impending disappearance of XP computers from retailers and the phased withdrawal of technical support in coming years is causing a minor panic. There are a whole lot of people who are having this problem. A guy named Galen Grumman started a Save XP web petition and has gathered since January more than 100,000 signatures and thousands of comments, mostly from diehard XP users who want Microsoft to keep selling it until the next version of Windows is released, currently targeted for 2010. On the petition site's comment section, some users proclaimed they will downgrade from Vista to XP, which is an option that has been available in the past to businesses, but is now open for the first time to consumers who buy Vista Ultimate or Business Editions if they need to buy a computer after XP goes off the market. I think that's wonderful of Microsoft to let you spend $500, $700 on an operating system.
And they win
and
both
then take
ends.
It off and put on an operating system. You'll pay Microsoft a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, and, they're winning both ways. And I don't consider it a downgrade. It's an upgrade going from Vista to XP.
I've got to wonder how many people in this petition would be perfectly well suited by some flavor of Linux, but don't even know it.
Right, right. And that's the thing, people are afraid and reluctant.
Well, the other thing too, though,
to try
is
something new
also,
like that.
Like we tell listeners all the time, depending on the environment that they're going to, some of them just can't go over to Linux because they can't take the time to do the learning curve if they're using it for business whatever.
And that's one of the.
It'd be great if it was a second machine.
That's one of the reasons that Vista has had such a slow adoption, other than the fact that it crashes and doesn't work and isn't compatible with anything.
Other than that,
it is a learning curve, and businesses, especially if things are working with XP, don't want to have to change.
Well, the thing of it is, though, is Microsoft now has been trying to sell this bill of goods that it's such a great product, and it just isn't. Lying.
What's interesting,
that's the bottom line. Nobody wants this piece of crap software.
What's interesting is that most Microsoft people now, and we're seeing it in the press, have basically stopped saying anything about Vista, and it's just wait until Windows 7. Wait until Windows 7.
Microsoft is saying that, and consequently, that's what leads us all to believe that Vista is the 21st century's ME.
Yes. Like I told you, a few weeks ago. Hear me now, remember me later.
Yep.
The new System 7 is going to be a strong flavor, a very strong hint of XP with a little of the Vista features in it. Not the annoying, I don't think, remind me every time I go to do and change anything. Maybe some of the glowing fluff, but definitely not the system requirements that they're throwing on folks that are needed for Vista.
Right.
And if you're still running,
can't afford it.
If you're still running 98 and 2000, you're going to have to jump even higher.
Yep.
In your hardware to get a new computer.
I mean, how many systems are you demanding to change over at RIT?
We're probably going to change next, maybe this fall, maybe.
Not to everything, right?
No.
Just what you have to.
Well, we're certainly going to do the labs.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a good thing in schools that is in the labs that they should learn the new OS.
Yes. In terms of people's desktops and laptops, our laptops will all run it, but not well.
Right.
I mean, it's just, you know. We were among the people that were lied to by Microsoft when they said it was Vista compatible.
Well, and that brings up the Vista compatible badge lawsuits, that there's a class action lawsuit pending against Microsoft for this Vista compatible badge that came out in the end of 2006 that, yeah, it can run Vista, you know, Windows Vista Home Basic Starter Limited doesn't do anything version. So, you know,
but hey,
technically it can run Vista.
Right.
Yep.
All right, we're going to the phones, and our first caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
Hi, guys. When my computer starts up, when I look in MS Config, there's a file called SoundMan, SoundMan.exe.
Mm-hmm.
Is that anything good or bad?
An extra utility that's loading up that you probably don't need.
It's your sound.
So you can uncheck it.
It's your sound manager that manages your sound card. To allow it to play sound in the computer.
Yeah, but it's not needed. It will still play sounds even though you uncheck it. It's a utility for, you know, working with other features usually within the sound manager program.
Yeah, you may not be able to control bass and treble functions or the equalizer functions.
You just go into the program once you got them set. Who the heck goes into them constantly to have it nagging you and taking up resources on the toolbar?
So I can get rid of it then?
Just uncheck it.
Just uncheck it.
Yeah, uncheck it. I mean, that's the beauty of working within MS Config. You can uncheck things that you know you don't want to try to use, and if it doesn't work, then you can always put the check mark back. You're not totally eliminating it.
Thank you very much.
All right. There you go. And yeah, he may find that he loses his sound.
No.
And he likely won't, but no, if he does, he can just check it again.
What it usually is that I've seen, and I had it on mine too, and it's just like with the JavaScript and all this other stuff. When the application needs it, you just click on it and it'll start it up. But that sound program, for the most part, it's another background utility, like Steve was saying, adjusting, more bass, more treble. Oh, I want the aux to work also. You know, it's those tools that folks don't use that
all. Right. All right. Our next caller is Jim on a cell phone. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah. I don't know. Are you Jim on a cell phone?
No, I'm not a cell phone, but.
Okay, go ahead, though.
Okay, go ahead.
My computer won't download. It's called a .NET framework update. There's supposedly two of them, and it won't do it. It just constantly cycles, does it's downloading it. It's going to shut down the computer when it's done, and it never does.
That's almost a good thing.
Now.
The .NET just adds so much crap to your PC.
Yeah, you don't need it.
But some programs require it and force you to install it. Your bigger issue is a very common issue where a Windows update is stuck, thinks it's updated, hasn't, so then it thinks it has to update again. I remember reading about a Windows utility that Microsoft put out
to let you
fix that. Yeah. Let me see if I can find that. So it's not an uncommon problem. It usually happens with some of the hot fixes, but it also I read about it happening with .NET.
All right. So how do I stop it from wanting to download this thing?
Uncheck it in the software update.
Yeah. Instead of doing an express download, do a custom.
Uh-huh.
And what you can do is then uncheck it and say, don't remind me about this again.
Does this have a KB number after it in the message?
So yes, I believe that it does.
Yeah, KB922770 is a common update that will not install, and I'm posting the link onto our link list on what Microsoft.
There's a more direct one at 837033.
Yeah, and then 923100.
Right.
So there's a lot of them.
Yes, there are a lot of them.
So he's going to put up a link on our webpage that you can look it up. And hopefully
if you find some program requires that .NET framework to be installed, then it's one way to get it installed.
Right, exactly.
What exactly does that do?
Oh, what does .NET do, Nick?
Well, .NET is an internal language in which a lot of their stuff is now written. So it's an update for some of their own software to get new features and to fix bugs in the .NET framework system. It's used by pretty much any of Microsoft's products that go to the internet at some point, which is, well, all of them. So it's a language thing. It's a, you know, you can run in like C.NET and ASP.NET. Those are the languages that Microsoft uses. So you would be able to write code in that, or somebody's already written code may need those extra libraries in order to run. And that's what that's all about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Yep. Thank you. All right. Our next caller is Kevin, who may also not be on a cell phone. Kevin, are you on a cell phone?
Yeah, guys. How you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Hey, I got a quick question for you. I got a Dell XPS desktop. It's our second computer, so it's running off of a, what do you want to call it?
Router?
Router.
Mm-hmm.
Time Warner. So I got the modem. The issue that I just came up with, I can't get onto the internet. And it's got something to do with a domain name, a DNS.
Are you using Roadrunner?
Yes.
Roadrunner just changed their DNS servers. For the rest of the people, the DNS is short for Domain Name Lookup. When you type, say...
Actually, Domain Name Services, that's why it's an S.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, that uses the DNS, yeah. The Domain Name Service Lookup. Thank you.
DNS.
Thank you. DNS, Domain
short
Name Lookup.
Short for My Left Leg.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
When you type an address into your browser, like Microsoft.com or soundbites.org, computers don't know names. So the Domain Name Service looks up that name and finds out what address it really is, the numbers. People can remember names easier than numbers, so that's why this service exists. So your internet service provider tells your computer what domain name address is so that your computer will work. Well, okay. Roadrunner just changed their domain name, so you have to go into your router and change the domain name IP entries in your router setup. And I'll see if I can find a link on Time Warner's site on how to do that.
Then it'll be on our website at soundbites.org.
It depends on what router you're using, because it's slightly different for each brand of router.
Right. But that'll all be explained on the site. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. It's 20 after. It's 1180 WHAM. Francesca.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright. I just realized I forgot to start recording.
Go ahead and say your name again, Chris.
You looked at your recording.
Chris, say your name again.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton, who forgot to turn on the button.
Oops.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are the professionals.
And we'll get this figured out yet.
That's right. It's only buttons and stuff, so we'll get there. SciStar, a Miami-based IT services company, started advertising the $400 open computer this week. It purported to be a generic PC that comes with Leopard, Apple's latest operating system, pre-installed. If this were true, while SciStar may be violating Apple's end-user license agreement, or EULA, or EULA, by doing this legally, there's not much Apple could do about it. Breach of contract is one of the weakest forms of legal disputes. The deal was, they're selling what looks like a pretty nice computer without an operating system. The hook is that if you buy Leopard from them, at the same time, they will install it on that nice computer for you. Based on the company's website, claims engineers at SciStar appear to be emulating parts of the Mac firmware on a Windows PC, fooling Leopard into thinking it's running on top of genuine Apple hardware. SciStar claims it can successfully install Leopard's kernel straight from the OS X disk using an extensible firmware interface emulator and a few drivers to ensure everything runs smoothly. Sounds great, doesn't it? Too great to be true? Yeah. Here's the thing. The company's based in Miami, Florida. Unfortunately, the Miami Chamber of Commerce has never heard of them. The Better Business Bureau has never heard of them.
No, they have now.
They have now.
They're looking for them.
They've changed their address from a home to a business that's never heard of them to another address and another address and yet another address. The principals behind the company are also the principals behind about a dozen other non-existent companies. My suggestion, if you really want a Mac clone, buy a Mac, paint it yellow, stick a banana logo on it, and wait for Berkeley Breathe to sue you. But don't buy any crap from SciStar.
And if you did, in that few minutes their website was open, cancel your credit cards.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
did you have that in there, too? Their credit card processing company canceled their contract for breach of contract?
Yes. So if you actually bought from SciStar, you might want to talk to your bank about canceling your credit cards.
Or on attorney.
Or your attorney, exactly. On the other hand, check out the OS X86 project, where maniacs are putting Leopard on all kinds of Intel computers for real at osx86project.org. if you want to do it for real, it is actually apparently quite doable, and people are doing it over and over and over again.
And several of the Mac magazines, Macworld, did a big breakdown where a guy did just that, buy all the components to build a Mac clone, and he didn't really save any money about a, over a pre-configured Mac.
Well, if he bought all Mac stuff, but we're talking about...
Well, no, this was a generic PC motherboard, a generic PC case, generic PC video card. Apple's
base, but he built it himself.
Right. You pay a little more. Apple's base computer starts at $599,
right.
Which wasn't much more than the $399 this company was claiming to sell it at. The big trick is that Apple uses EFI and PCs use BIOS. And as soon as more...
EFI being extensible
firmware architecture or interface?
Yeah, EFI.
EFI, extensible firmware interface.
Thank EFI, my left leg.
My left leg, right.
We're going to
BIOS.
Steve,
let me try this one.
DVD's of Sesame
Basic
Street.
Input, output, system. So, people don't realize that's an actual technology that, we tell them to go into the BIOS. Yeah. So as soon as more and more PCs are going to start using the EFI instead of BIOS, but it's going to take a change in Windows. Vista supports EFI, doesn't it?
I believe it does, yeah.
So you can
use... But nothing else.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, yes, and then back to that half a second. There's nothing inherently wrong with Vista itself, as long as you don't want to run anything else. Well, as long as you don't want to run anything else with it. No old scanners, no old software.
Hold on. It works a lot like things like Mac OS X. When it first came out, it had a very limited subset of hardware that it worked with. And if you bought all that hardware, it ran fine. But if you wanted to hook your old original LaserWriter and stuff like that, you might have some problems. Eventually, drivers came out for it, which is apparently not happening with Vista. But the point is, if you bought a Vista machine and bought all brand new hardware with real Vista drivers, it ran fine.
Yeah, if your old printer doesn't work, buy a new printer.
Maybe.
Well, but yeah, it did.
No, I've had some folks that have gotten some stuff that said it's Vista ready, it still doesn't work.
Right. Vista ready versus Vista compatible versus Vista compliant.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I got some swampland for you.
All right, our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Gentlemen, I'm having a sound problem. I noticed over the last month or two, the sound on my machine, which is running XP, Windows XP, the sound was getting fainter. And now, although I've checked every possible volume control, both on the screen and the physical volume control on the speaker system, I can barely hear the sound.
Have you tried another set of speakers?
No.
Or headphones?
I don't have another set of speakers handy.
Or do you have a set of headphones?
I think I do somewhere downstairs.
Just plug in the headphones where the speakers would normally go and see how the sound comes out of those.
They're trying to isolate if it's the computer, the sound card, or the speakers.
Yeah.
Right.
And,
so if
you
tried
the volume control inside of Windows and the volume control on the speakers.
Exactly.
Right. Here's it's a desktop or a laptop?
It's a desktop. I've never touched any of the sound. I leave it all alone, and it just started slowly fading until now.
Well, all right. So here's the deal. Get those headphones and plug them in. Or borrow a pair from anybody.
Now, do they
with
plug
iPod.
In somewhere on the tower?
Same place the speakers would plug in.
Okay.
Just unplug the speakers and plug those on in their place.
Now, you might have to sit down on the floor.
Right, but the point is, you play something, and if it sounds fine, the problem is in your speakers.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't sound fine, then the problem is in your system, in the sound card.
Well, it's faint, but it sounds okay from what little, it's pretty faint to hear all the subtleties.
Like I say, you got to try that one thing.
So it could be the sound card, though.
Did you listen?
Yeah.
We don't know yet, and that's why we're asking you to try a pair of headphones tell us.
Right. You can also try those speakers on some other device, a radio tape player. Are the speakers battery powered or are they wall powered?
Wall powered.
Okay, because sometimes a weak battery could do this. Yeah, try different speakers or a headphone on that computer. Try those speakers on some other device, and that will help you isolate which one it is.
Okay.
Yeah, the speakers are easy and cheap to replace. The sound card is cheap, but not that easy to replace.
Right. Mm. You do have to open up the machine.
Okay.
But beyond that, it should be fine. So try that and let us know what the result was.
Yeah, it's always the detective work. You got to isolate where the problem is with this big system of things.
Right. All right, our next caller, Kathy from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Kathy. What's your question?
Hi. First of all, I'm computer illiterate.
Welcome to the club.
Second of all, I bought yesterday a new laptop and a router.
Mm-hmm.
And they assured me I could install everything myself. So I did, and I had some problems, but that's not the
major problem. The major problem is that my power strip didn't have enough spaces, so I substituted a new power strip. And when I did and plugged my old PC into it, no power went to my old PC. It goes to the printer. It goes to the screen. It goes to my Roadrunner. It goes to my router. But it doesn't go to my old PC.
Did you check the power plug in the back of your computer to make sure that that hadn't come loose?
Yes, I did.
And the button on the back of the power supply is set to be on.
Where's the button on the back?
There's sometimes on the back of the power supplies where it plugs in. There's an on-off switch sometimes back there.
An on-off switch on the power strip.
No, where the computer plugs into the computer.
Yeah.
Right near that plug, sometimes there's also a toggle switch.
Okay, now there's a red switch that says something on one side and something on
the other. No. This would be an on-off toggle switch.
Well, it could say 1 and 0, not on and off.
It doesn't say 1 and 0. It doesn't say on and off. It has...
Right, that would be some
numbers. She's talking about the voltage.
Yeah, voltage. It says 115 and 230.
Yeah, you don't want to touch that.
Okay,
well, actually, make sure that...
I touched it when it was off, and then I decided it wasn't a good idea and put it back where it was.
Right, make sure that's set for 115.
Yeah, okay, it is on 115.
Yeah.
And there's no on-off switch back there?
There might be, but I'm not at a phone next to the computer. Yeah.
Right, you got to check that.
The other thing you might try to do is unplug your printer, plug your computer into that same plug.
I did that.
And it still didn't work.
And it still didn't work.
Okay.
In fact, I took the printer off and went back to the old power strip even. Because first I tried it in a different outlet in the new power strip.
When you plugged it in.
Yeah.
Your computer.
Yeah.
Nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
What did you try?
Well, first of all, I switched from one power strip to the other. So.
Okay. That's good.
Let me step back. When you plugged it in, did you press the on button on your computer?
Yeah.
Okay, and still nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
Okay.
Then check on the back of the computer to see if there's a toggle switch there.
Okay.
If there isn't, 10 to 1 odds, the power supply is blown.
Okay.
I've been replacing a number of power supplies this week. If I've replaced one, it's been at least 4 of them.
Now, I have to tell you that a couple of times when my computer's completely frozen in the past 6 months, and I just can't get it to do anything, like Alt-Control-Delete doesn't do it or anything, I've just turned my power supply on, turned it off again, and sometimes my computer doesn't come on until a good bit later.
Well, that's because they all have a special switch in them that prevents them from turning on until they've cooled down.
Oh, okay.
So, in fact...
This has waited long enough, so it probably is.
Well, yeah, it's probably not that in this case. But in general, for all of you listening, if you have a problem with your machine where you turn it off, count a slow 10 count before you turn it back on again, just to prevent any sort of heat-related problems.
Oh, talk about heat-related.
I mean a slow 10 count.
Okay, now if it's totally blown and I decide it's too old to repair it and I'll just go with the laptop, how do I get a hard drive out of it to move some things to my other computer?
Well, you can bring it to us. We can burn it to DVD for you.
Uh-huh. Or transfer it directly from the hard drive to the new computer.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you'd have to take the computer apart, know how to pull the hard drive out, know how to mount it on a different computer.
And burn it all to DVD.
So
you have to be good with tools and hands.
So I can wait till my son comes home from graduate school and have it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Project for him.
Okay. So, I'll try for the toggle switch, and then I'll... But I can wait and do that later, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
You might even just try a different power cord going from the power strip to the computer. It's unlikely but possible that cord could have failed.
The cord that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay, right. Thanks.
That's one thing, though, I've been noticing a lot of folks. We had one today. I think the birds in my neighborhood love us. And the reason being, I took one case out. It was so packed with dust. You could not see any of the fins or any of that around the whole CPU. The fan was literally plugged. It had two side fans, and the screening from that was totally plugged. So I take it outside, and I've got the hookup outside, blowing it. You're seeing all this dust flying through the air. I thought it was a sandstorm or something. The birds are going nuts. Literally, there's a few birds around the neighborhood coming along, picking up the hunks of dust to take it back for their nest.
Sure. We had a dog who was part husky. And we'd brush her coat out. Sometimes that hair wouldn't hit the ground. Birds would be swooping down and picking it up. So parts of Winston were in every nest in the neighborhood. All right, our next caller is Bob from Henrietta. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Howdy. First of all, I'm on a cell phone, and I'm one of those dinosaurs that's still running 98 and bought a spare machine, and I'm trying to teach myself Linux. So, I'm giving it a shot in my spare time. Anyway, the question is, my wife has an XP, I don't know what kind of a computer it is, and it's got XP hooked up to Rochester Roadrunner. And when you try to open, like, Firefox, it takes 15, 20 seconds for that window to open from the desktop. And I did the Control-Alt-Delete to look at that window, and, man, there's a list of stuff running in there.
That's why it has nothing to do with Firefox.
I realize that. I'm just wondering, what can I do about that? And I'm not anywhere near as computer literate as you
guys. How much memory?
You know, I don't know. I'm not familiar with her machine. Well, I've been married 6 months, so I really don't know.
Oh, congratulations. So you don't want to screw this up.
No,
they've only been married 6 months. It's too early to screw things up.
Yeah, right.
But, now, you might want to check this. You know, it should have at least 512. And, I mean, some of those things probably in the startup toolbar could come out of there. You know, if
the
she's
problem
loading,
in
like,
this case is
Adobe.
Right. The problem in this case is there are literally millions of things that could be running in that taskbar. And we couldn't conceivably enumerate all of them, tell you which ones are good or bad. That has to be looked at by somebody with knowledge. Now, if you brought the machine to Dave or to Steve, they could take a look. Well, and you pay them, of course, because that's what they do for a living. But they could look at that list and tell you what you could cut out and why, and even do it for you. But over the phone, there are just way too many options. But bring it to one of these guys, and that should solve your problem. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. This is a timely story. About 1% of the web pages being delivered on the internet are being changed in transit, sometimes in a harmful way, according to researchers at the University of Washington. In a paper set to be delivered Wednesday, the researchers document some troubling practices. In July and August, they tested data sent to about 50,000 computers and discovered that a small number of ISPs, Internet service providers, were injecting ads into web pages on their networks. They also found that some web browsing and ad blocking software was actually making web surfing more dangerous by introducing security vulnerabilities into pages. To get the data, the team wrote software that would test whether or not someone visiting a test page on the University of Washington's website was viewing HTML that had been altered in transit. In 16 instances, ads were injected into the page by the visitor's internet service provider. The service providers named by the researchers are generally small ISPs, such as Red Moon, Mesa Networks, and MetroFi, but the paper also named one of the largest ISPs in the U.S., XO Communications, as an ad injector. An XO spokes individual said that the company does not engage in this practice and that any ad injection linked to its network is probably being done by a downstream service provider that is purchasing network capacity from XO. Back in June of 2007, Red Moon, a small Texas wireless provider, was using a system built by a Redwood City, California company named NebuAd to insert advertising into the HTML code of web pages. So we are finding that some internet service providers are making even more money off of you by changing the ads you see, which will, of course, introduce vulnerabilities into your system. Now, this also fits in with what just happened to Steve.
Just
would you like to share
that
with us,
Steve?
During
the break. I'm still digging around, trying to find the link for the Roadrunner IP address change, but since we're not connected to Roadrunner at the moment, I can't search inside of Roadrunner that easily. So one of the, fact for warnings for everyone else, you know, I Googled Rochester Roadrunner DNS IP change. One of the hits I found is a Macintosh porn Trojan that we talked about a few months ago, that it says it needs to download a video file to let you watch this video, and it's actually a DNS IP changer, which is why the Google search found it, that puts new DNS entries.
And remember, DNS stands for my left leg.
My left leg. It puts new entries into your computer. So you type paypal.com, and instead of going to PayPal, it sends you to a fake PayPal website where it steals your information.
But this is even more insidious because you still think you're at PayPal because the browser says PayPal.
Says and, PayPal, right. And the pages look like PayPal. So they've cloned several of the PayPal and eBay and Amazon, a lot of the big names that you give your credit card information to. So it's the first actual attack I've had on my Mac in probably 10 years.
But there it is,
yeah.
Attacks happen to Mac.
It's a Trojan, not a virus.
Most of them are Trojans nowadays. There haven't been viruses in 5 years. We call them viruses, but they're all Trojans now.
Right on off. I mean,
all right, our next caller is Luke from Honey Eye Falls. Welcome, Luke. What's your question?
Yeah, I just bought a webcam.
Yes.
And I was thinking, because I had Windows Movie Maker on my laptop, and I thought I would be able to edit the videos I shot from my webcam on Windows Movie Maker, but I can't even find them.
What program are you recording them with?
It's just a Logitech webcam. You know, you just hit record and you
so it's Logitech's video. Own software.
Well, the camera doesn't magically take pictures. You have to use some program to take the movies
with the
webcam to do the capturing. And wherever that program saves those files, you should be able to change that, look it up one way or the other, and then that will tell you where it is and how you can use it.
I mean, usually, when you create one, doesn't it ask you what to save it as?
Well, yeah. What software are you using to save video?
It's just the software that's on the camera.
There should be a preference there about where it's saving those files.
Yeah. And how you're naming them.
All right, I can't even figure out how to change the name of the file.
It's got to be in the preferences somewhere to change the default name. After you save it on the desktop, you can change the name easily there.
What you might want to do is go into the help, usually within the program. In the help, they usually have and check as far as saving file names or how to save a clip. Do the research on that. Then do a capture, save it as a certain name. And if you're having trouble locating where it is, you can always do down off the Windows Start button, a search, and then you search for that file, and it'll show you where its location is.
Yeah, the trick is if you don't know what the name is, and you don't know
what
the...
Well, that's what I'm saying. If he names it a specific name, first saves the file, call it test 1, and then he doesn't know where it's being saved, he can always do a search for a file name called test 1, and it'll point him to the file directory where it's being saved.
Okay, now movies don't come in different kinds of files, like pictures.
It's WMV, it's AVI, it's MOV, depending on the program you use and what preferences you give it depends on what format it saves it in.
So it's possible that I'll never be able to use Windows Media Player to edit the movies I take.
Correct. You need to save it as WMV or maybe DV even. It depends on what formats Windows Movie Maker can use, which is intended to come from a video camera, not a web camera.
Right.
Probably some conversion available.
Right. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Chris, Rob, me, Nick, and you. 50 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 54 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. All right, kiddies. It's that time once again. Go grab your footy jammies, get a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Yep. Awake this time.
All right, go.
All right, two things, and I think Steve will concur with me with this. I have looked through all the yellow pages. As far as computer repair. And I haven't found anybody there that does like 1 hour photomat service on computer repair. Now, I guess what I really need is somebody to either sew or create. I need two of them. One that looks like a laptop and another that looks like a desktop that I can loan out to people that they're nice and squishy and, you know, they can hold it and squeeze it. Because, you know, some of these folks go through withdrawal.
Yep,
now, here's the thing, folks. When we wind up, you drop off your computer, a couple things. One, we don't offer 1 hour turnaround time. When we tell you it's going to take 1 to 2 days, when you bring it in at, say, 4 o'clock that afternoon, that doesn't count as day one.
We had somebody do that. They called at 9 a.m. and said, well, you were open for an hour last night after I dropped it off.
Yeah, I had one.
You had it for 2 days, yesterday and today.
And we've had some that drop it off, and they sit there and call the next day. Well, is it ready yet? Is it ready yet? And they're calling 3-4 times. And I feel like saying, you know what? If I wasn't on the phone talking to you, telling you what I'm doing to your computer, I could be working on it and getting it fixed.
I still like the guy that put it in your bushes and then called Tuesday morning and asked if it was done yet.
Yeah.
Put it in the bushes so it wouldn't get stolen because you were closed.
My suggestion is the next time somebody calls and says, can I pick it up? You can say, yes, it's not done, but you can pick it up anytime.
I've done that before. Yeah, they'll say, so I can come and pick it up in an hour? Yeah, but it won't be fixed. But that's where I think I need this. They could stuff it with styrofoam or whatever in something that I could loan it out to them and they could squeeze it and hug it because it's their baby and they worry about things being done. I acknowledge.
How do you say you're not our only customer, you have to wait your turn politely?
Oh, exactly. And the concept of first come, first serve. Just because you bring it in, that doesn't mean it. Mm-hmm. Well, you got me going on this one.
Rob, hold him down. I'll give him his shot.
You know, it's just a matter of customer service. You take a number. You don't cut in line.
We do have same-day service for $200 an hour.
For God's sakes, cut off your mic.
You gotta. I mean, hello?
We're done with this one. Done. You know, that's it. Cut off. What is wrong with you? You have the ultimate control, and you're just sitting there
giggling like a schoolgirl.
He knows better.
I control his mother's computer, too.
Nick is yelling at Rob.
For pity's sake and a half.
All right. We're just listening to the music.
Crackers.
Yeah, that music ought to calm Uncle Dave down.
Yeah, this will. Yeah, for sure. There we go. Tranquilizer's taking hold, kiddies. Get your footy jammies off, rinse out your hot cocoa mugs, and scatter for the hills until next week for another Story Hour with Uncle Dave. We are going to take a much-deserved break while we bandage ourselves from the struggle of getting Uncle Dave calmed down. We will be back while we're gone. You'll get all the stuff you really listen to Wham for, the news, the weather, the sports, all of that good stuff. On the other side of that, we'll have our poll, a whole lot more interesting things to talk about, and, of course, a whole lot more of your calls. If you're on the line, please stay there. If you're not, I don't know why not. It's going to be a fun hour. With Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 58 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edwards.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Every week on our website at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Oh, and probably Francis, along with everybody else, would like us to remind you that if you're looking for us on iTunes, Soundbites is two words, but still has a Y in it, and not in the word sound. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about the cost of Blu-ray players actually going up. And we asked, so how much would you pay for a Blu-ray player? 213 of you voted, making a number 321 in the all-time hit list. And the choices were everything from $400 down to $200. Clearly, the majority of you are even cheaper than that, since 54% of you left opinions that stated you'd play somewhere along the order of $50 for one. This week's poll has to do with an interesting news article. PayPal, eBay's payment service and the frequent target of fraudsters, plans to block browsers that don't include anti-phishing features from accessing its site. Under PayPal's plan, Apple Safari would be banned completely, while only older versions of its rivals, Microsoft's Internet Explorer and Mozilla's Firefox, would be barred. PayPal spelled out the idea in a paper released at last week's RSA conference. It's critical to not only warn users about unsafe browsers, but also to disallow older and insecure browsers, said Michael Barrett, PayPal's chief information security officer, in the paper. Letting users view the PayPal site on one of these browsers is equal to a car manufacturer allowing drivers to buy one of their vehicles without seatbelts. The two features that Barrett said browsers must have to be considered safe by PayPal were an ability to block known or suspected phishing sites and support for extended validation, EV certificates. EVs, which are given to companies only after the more stringent background checks than the commonplace SSL secure socket layer certificates, are supposed to reassure users that the online site is legitimate. Browsers that support EVs typically shade the address bar green as a signal that the site is safe. But while the current or soon-to-be-released versions of IE and Firefox support both of PayPal's must-have features, Safari includes neither. PayPal's mentioned that before. In February, Barrett said users should steer clear of Apple's browser because it wasn't up to snuff. Apple, unfortunately, is lagging behind what they need to do to protect their customers, Barrett said then. Safari's got nothing in terms of security support, only SSL. That's it. Under PayPal's plan, users running browsers lacking an anti-phishing blocking tool and support for EVs would first be only warned. Later, PayPal would block such browsers from accessing its site. PayPal did not specify a timetable when it would switch on browser blocking. So our poll today is, this week, is PayPal going to block the Safari browsers? And your choices are, holy Oh, dear, line noise. I don't know what that would have said. Who do they think they are? Meh, I'll use Firefox. Who cares? It's only Apple and PayPal, like that matters to me. And so far, we've had somewhere on the order of 70 votes. And the winner so far is PayPal, like that matters to me. 29% of you so far. Close on its heels, 24% said, meh, I'll use Firefox. 23% said, who cares? It's only Apple. 13%, who do they think they are? And 11% said, holy line noise. Now, when you're done voting, of course, we know that just being able to click a button is not enough for you people. You want to speak your piece. Well, I give you that opportunity. Underneath the poll is a yellow box. You will see a link there. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Cool. I like it. I like it. Where you can actually enter an opinion, as a dozen of you have done already. So please do that. One person says, oh, Microsoft's going to purchase PayPal. Yeah, they'd have to buy eBay, actually, before they could buy PayPal, since PayPal's already owned by eBay. But other than that, it's a heck of a guess.
Well, theoretically, eBay could sell just PayPal if they wanted to.
They could. I suppose they could.
They wouldn't want to.
I don't think they would want to. Right. But they could. So anyway, that's that. So give us your opinion. And my website at AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Well done. Lots of stuff you can do there. I put out a newsletter, and you can read old versions of the newsletter, and you can search, and you can get on the forums and ask questions, and all of that is a mere $15 a year, so I can't imagine why you aren't doing it already, signing up right this second, and then join us back on the Soundbites website for our forums and all the cool stuff that's going on. We're having a Guess the Picture contest that's been going on forever now. It looks like it's never going to end.
Dolores still in it?
Dolores is winning left and right. She is a frightening individual. Dolores, I love you, but you're scary. You're scary. She gets the, you know, somebody puts up a picture, 2 seconds later, Dolores says, oh yeah, that's the left hand of Sigmund Freud from a, you know, 1924 talk he gave at the London Institute of Psychiatry. Well, how do you know that? All right, but
before we go back, one of the callers asked if I'd repeat where my shop is. It's Enright PC. We're at 70 Empire Boulevard. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. And the phone number is 442-4843.
Steve, equal time.
Thank you. We are Mac Ave by Jesse Group. We are at 7716 Victor Menden Road, which is Route 251 in Victor, just off of 96, just past the mall.
You know what? We went by your place because I had to go out to a client. Mm. Boy, you folks are way out there.
Not if you live in the area.
No, what I mean.
It's nice out there. No.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, you know,
we're 5 minutes from the end of 490.
No, but
5 minutes. But 5 minutes from the end of 490.
Oh. No, go for down
people
the road,
on that
really,
side. For people on that side of town, it's actually they know where it is.
We have a lot of customers in the Southern Tier and Ontario County area that hate to go all the way to the city.
Well, I didn't
there you
know.
Go.
No, it's just that I didn't know where your new place was. Look, and Dan and I were going to this client. We turned onto this one street. Wait a minute, there's Mac Ave as we're going by. Now we know where
Should've
Steve
stopped
is.
Should have stopped in and said hi.
Well, we're on our way to the client, so, you know, we couldn't. At the
All time. Right, our next caller is Dave from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi, Mac. How you doing?
Excellent. How are you?
Good, thanks. I have a 2-year-old XP computer from Gateway with Media Center. And my daughter wants to set up a new account for her, and I have Roadrunner, and she was successful in doing that. Unfortunately, my old administrator account is now gone. I can't find it anywhere. And
Your computer's administrator account or your Roadrunner administrator account?
Computer administrator account. And the issue is I don't have email now. I use Outlook Express, and I can open Outlook Express, but there's no email there. And do you have any steps where I could...
Are you sure she made a new account for herself, or did she change the admin account to her?
That I'm not sure of. She's used the same password, and it's under a different name.
It sounds like she just changed your name to hers.
Okay.
So
yeah,
things that are expecting to find your path names and your name won't work anymore.
What you can do is if she can log on and get to the under the control panel, get under the user account.
Mm-hmm.
And just wipe out all the passwords.
Well, no,
for him to redo.
No.
Tell us how you really feel.
Maybe. What she needs to do, what he needs to do is get into her account and rename it back to admin or to his name or to whatever it used to be and yeah. see if his stuff shows up again.
And what, then make a new user. Don't right. change the.
But what I was going to say, though, is by taking off all the passwords for right now, and like you, that's what I was going to finish saying, put it back to admin while he's working on it. This way he has full control.
Right. Yeah, she's using the same password that I had under my administrator.
Yeah, I would not remove the passwords. I would first change the name back to what it used to be.
Okay.
And then see if your stuff shows up.
Okay.
If it does, then it wasn't wiped out. She just changed the name. Then you just make her a new account okay. with her name.
But the key thing is, the reason I say take the passwords off is so that you can go back and now put a new admin password on there that you control.
That she doesn't know.
Write it down that she doesn't know.
That's exactly right. But you don't have to take them off to do that. You just have to change it.
It's just easier than going from one account to the other. You're constantly typing in passwords. I find that annoying.
Okay.
When I'm working on machines, you know, and I've got like right. six different users Whatever. To go into, and I want to type six different passwords? No.
Okay. Well, I'll try renaming it's the account and then passwords maybe in the future.
There you go.
Okay. Thanks for the help, guys.
Yep.
Bye.
All right. Our next caller. Is unknown to me.
Wait a minute. Let me.
Steve in Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
I'm trying to load a Logitech cordless mouse.
Yeah.
When I put the Logitech disc in, it went ahead and automatically updated the disc. I could see it working on the screen, but I couldn't do anything about the update. Now, when I follow the directions, it gets to a point where it says there is a new updated version of the software in your machine, so you can't load this mouse anymore.
What probably happened is when you put the disk in, it auto-ran the installer. You cannot update a CD. It's read-only. It can't be updated. So it ran the installer, installed the version of the mouse from the CD, and then a lot of installers now will immediately check the internet to see if there's a new version. It downloaded and installed that, so the error message is probably correct. You have a newer version in your computer than you have on the CD, so you don't need the CD anymore.
Okay, but how do I end up loading this darn mouse?
Sounds like it is loaded.
Yeah, sorry, sounds like it should be loaded.
Is the mouse not working?
The mouse is not functioning because you cannot move the arrow.
Is it a Bluetooth mouse or is it an RF mouse? You said it was cordless?
It's a cordless. Let me see.
Each type of mouse, if it's Bluetooth or RF or IR, those are the three major cordless features. You have to configure the computer to see that mouse.
Is the battery also fresh?
You got batteries that have to be fresh in the mouse.
Yeah,
the mouse has to be turned on.
If it's a Bluetooth mouse, you have to do pairing, and that procedure should be in the manual.
Hit the two connect buttons.
If it's an IR mouse or an RF mouse, there's usually connect buttons on the bottom of the mouse that tell it to look for the transmitter on the computer.
An RF mouse.
So there's a little RF dongle that you plug into your computer, and then the mouse itself will have a connect button on it too.
Right.
So if you push both of those connect buttons, they should talk to each other and synchronize.
Okay, I'll try that.
Also, make sure that the batteries are in correctly. There should be a light that comes on when you turn it on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the light comes on. I just changed the batteries, so I know they're good.
Good. Okay, try that connect, and you should be on your way.
Okay. And I want to tell your people that Enright services are wonderful.
That's what we like to hear. Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks, Steve. All right, our next caller, Paul from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Well, I'd be doing a lot better if I could get my daughter's laptop to start up.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, I don't know what it is.
All right, first, how old is your daughter?
She's 15.
Oh, you better get it started up because you're getting the treatment.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just so you guys know from listening to your show, I try to do all the right things. I'm running AVG and SpyBot and AdAware.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter came to me and said, Dad, what is this? And at first it looked like it was just the AVG running until I realized that it wasn't. It was actually Antivirus Pro. And so I did a little search on the net, and it says that this is in fact something that appears to be a legitimate antivirus.
But it isn't.
But it's not. It's a scam.
Right. And this happened on my daughter's laptop, another daughter's laptop a few weeks ago, and I spent a bunch of time getting that cleaned up. So went to uninstall this, and it seemed like it uninstalled. Went to restart the computer. And now the problem is it won't reboot. The only thing I can get it to do is reboot in safe mode. Every time I try to boot it in normal mode, it comes up with an error message saying that it was unexpectedly.
Right.
Yeah, this is very
unexpectedly stopped. And
right. This is very common with fake programs, the fake anti-spyware and the fake antivirus. They modify your registry so disastrously. I'm having trouble today.
My left leg.
That when you try to remove it, it quits working.
See, Paul, what you might want to do is you said you can get it into safe mode.
I'm in there right
I'm
now.
I'm posting removal instructions now.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you could also roll it back to a previous point in time. Restore it to a point, say, a couple days before that screen showed up.
Yeah, when I tried to go in and get it in to restore, it said that it was not on and it couldn't.
Yeah.
Oh, you turned that off. Yeah.
A lot of the fake programs also attach to your restore point, so when you try to restore, they're still there.
What Steve has done is posted in our forum, in our link list, in the stuff from today, the correct thing. So go to our website at soundbites.org, click on the links page, and I think it's the third or fourth link, is it? Yeah, number three, the list of sites mentioned weekly on the show. That'll show you how to do it, and you're obviously going to do that on another machine, print out that page, and bring it back to the laptop. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. It's 22 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Littleton.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. A small Pennsylvania company's patent lawsuits could hamstring the government's $1.5 billion effort to make the transition to digital television easier on consumers' wallets. Rembrandt Inc. owns a patent on technology that it says is part of the digital television broadcasting standard used by the TV networks. Rembrandt is suing 14 companies, including Walt Disney's ABC, General Electric's NBC, Universal, CBS Corp, and News Corp's Fox Broadcasting, for patent infringement and wants millions of dollars in royalties. The American Antitrust Institute, a nonprofit advocacy group, asked federal regulators last month to bar Rembrandt from enforcing its patent. Otherwise, Rembrandt's suits could add tens of millions of dollars to the cost of digital TV, most of which will likely be passed on to the consumers. This is a massive tax that Rembrandt is trying to place on the transition to digital TV, said David Balto, an antitrust attorney who co-wrote a petition the AAI, the American Antitrust Institute, submitted March 26 to the Federal Trade Commission. The American Antitrust Institute argues that Rembrandt is violating antitrust and fair competition laws by abusing the monopoly provided by its patent. In recent years, the FTC has required companies to license their patents and set maximum royalties in several cases. It involves technology standards. Of course, television broadcasters will be switching to digital-only signals on February 17th, 2009, after which analog TVs without cable, satellite, or converter boxes won't work. Through a $1.5 billion coupon program, the government is offering $40 vouchers to help pay for the boxes. Rembrandt has also sued five cable operators, including Comcast and Time Warner Cable, is in litigation with Harris Corp, one of the companies that makes digital transmitters used by the networks to broadcast digital signals. Yes, that Harris Corp. The company has also targeted television maker Sharp Electronics with a suit. The royalties Rembrandt is demanding could be passed on to consumers as higher prices for TVs and cable services. To its critics, Rembrandt is a patent troll, a term for companies that purchase patents from inventors and then seek to enforce them in court.
And the digital tuner boxes are currently on sale and available at Circuit City and Walmart and all the electronic stores. And
get it before the price goes up.
Well, and you can go to DTV2009.gov and get your coupon for a reduced price on the box. And right now, that is the best way to get digital television. Well, no big hit against cable and satellite and other sources, but they're all compressed. And the more channels you have on your cable or satellite, the more the compression is. Digital broadcast television is virtually uncompressed, comparatively, and you get a much better signal quality.
Yeah.
And it's just a really cool way to watch all the extra channels in digital, and if you have a high-def television, in widescreen high-def.
Well, one of the other big things that's going on right now, they just reported last week, most of the major stores like Circuit City and Sears and all these others were still selling the analog TVs.
But there's a sign on them. Well, see, I've been looking for a digital video recorder, and there's a sign on all of them that this does not have a digital tuner. You'll have to buy one.
See, they're just getting at it because a lot of them were, selling the old analog TVs and not letting folks know that's what they were buying just in the past week. So, yeah, a lot of them have been jumping on it to correct that because they don't want major lawsuit.
Right.
For the folks that are planning to go to DTV2009.gov and download that coupon, expires in 90 days. So if you're ready to plunk down your money, go ahead and get the coupon. If not, wait until you are, because it does expire in 90 days.
Very good advice. All right. Wait, before we go on, you have an announcement about the next cider meeting. Very important announcement.
Oh, thank you, Nick. Yes, May 14th, the next Apple Cider meeting. Yours truly will be giving a presentation on how I produce the soundcast, all the technology and software and hardware that I use. I'll be actually bringing the actual hardware that is used in the production of the podcast. You'll see a little bit of carpal tunnel relief tools there for the those that need the assistance with that. So May 14th, 7 o'clock East High School, use the Ohio Street entrance.
There you go. Our next caller is Tom from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good, and you?
Good, good. I recently bought a new video card for myself.
Congratulations.
It's a Radeon card made by ATI.
Uh-huh.
And since I installed it, everything seems to be working fine with one exception, and that is that I can't watch any videos. I use Nero Showtime or Windows Media Player. I also have a TV card. But on any of those, all I get is a green screen where I would expect to be seeing the video playing.
And it's the video overlay mode.
And
what a lot of video cards used to do is they had this, I forget what the name of it was. It was something like enhanced video resolution, which sounds good, so people turn it on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the olden days when computers and video cards weren't that powerful. So now you turn that off and the video works better. And some of it is based on the, especially the way the MPEG video works with DVDs, is it doesn't actually display the video. It puts that green screen up and puts the video in the green screen. So it's a video overlay mode that your card is not set properly for.
And Tom, did you also check for updated drivers?
I've been to the ATI website, mm-hmm. and I believe I have the most recent driver. So that doesn't seem to be a problem.
Okay.
But where do I find this setting for the enhanced video?
Somewhere in the video card properties.
Yeah.
All right.
Under
when
display.
Usually when you install the ATI program, it'll put up a menu screen that you can go in and, you know, adjust all that stuff.
Okay. It probably did.
It's probably under advanced somewhere.
Well, again, under if you start up the program for the ATI, usually under the help. You know, because they've done away with manuals. Most of that stuff is now loaded within the help screen. So go into the help, do a search, and look in for the enhanced.
Will do.
All right?
Yeah, thank you very much,
all right.
guys. All right. I usually work until 12:30, so I don't get to hear much of your program, but I'm home early today, and I love it. I'm glad I could get through.
Us super. Too. Don't forget, you can listen to the podcast every week. Chris does a great job putting it together, making it clean and professional sounding.
Thank you.
In fact, he makes it sound better than we always do.
Delay.
There you go. Thanks. All right. Our next caller is Pete from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Pete. What's your question?
Yes, I had a problem. Began the other day. I had some jerky mouse motions. You know, it wasn't following the actions of my hand. Kind of be delayed.
Right.
And I noticed I had another problem with Windows Media Player. I tried to open that up, and it was giving me some kind of error message.
Mm-hmm.
Can't find video card or driver or something or other. So I went to call tech support. I was on the phone with them for 3 hours, and they finally told me, well, change your settings back to a prior date. We can't figure it out. So anyway, now I'm stuck with they suggest remove Windows and reinstall it. But what I need to do now is get an external hard drive or something in order to do that.
Or just reinstall Windows over Windows.
Yeah, that's the first easier step.
That's the easier way to go. Yeah.
If I have a virus or something that's causing all these crazy actions to occur, will that...
Well, even that? The thing that is, though, is if we can get you back to Windows, then you can always dance the security tango and undo the mess.
Well, Windows already mostly works, right? The problem is a jerky mouse.
Yeah, and some problems with the Windows Media Center. If I try and play a CD, you know, this message window will come up there, and if I click on
changed? What did you add to your system?
Trend Micro Systems antivirus. I upgraded it.
Yeah.
And then I had a new mouse, a new cordless mouse, Logitech mouse that I installed.
Well, the Logitech mouse, particularly if it's a Bluetooth mouse.
Yes.
Could be having a lot of trouble with interference from like cordless phones and pretty much every other device in your house. They all run in the same band, the 2.5 gigahertz band. And that is often a problem, particularly if you have your cell phone on while you're sitting at the computer. It may be looking for Bluetooth itself and the signals may be interfering. Yeah.
Microwave
ovens. I had another Logitech mouse and I just wore out the clicker. So I just got another one. Same it didn't have any problem with the previous.
It really truly doesn't matter. That it could still be that, but it may also be the mouse is miscalibrated. It may be that was the old mouse optical?
Yeah, they were both.
They're both optical. Did you get a new mouse pad at the same time?
No, I'm just running it on my desktop.
Yeah, that should work. But I would suggest that rather than reinstalling Windows, I would dance the tango first. Yeah. And then if there's still a problem, then reinstall Windows over Windows without wiping everything out. Now, that said, you should still back up everything, but you can do that to a CD. You know, if you've got a CD or DVD burner, use that instead.
Yeah.
And just back up your data.
That can be a little tedious if you have a lot of data that won't fit on one disk.
Yeah.
So hard drives are convenient. CDs are cheaper.
Yeah.
A thumb drive.
If it'll fit all your data, fine.
Yeah.
Depends on how much stuff you're backing up.
Yeah.
You're only backing up your data, not the program.
Yeah. The tech support center that I went to is one of those where they can get in your computer and start moving the mouse around while you're sitting there. And he was looking through a bunch of system settings, and he's telling me, oh, that looks like a virus. That looks like a virus. On a couple of these things that he was scrolling through. So
he wouldn't know what viruses are. It might be Trojans. You don't usually see viruses.
Yeah. Well, my suggestion still is dance the tango first.
Yes.
Which you should be able to do. Just go to securitytango.com, click on the Let's Dance button, print out the page, and follow it along step by step. Let us know what happens.
Slowly I turn.
Inch by inch. Our next caller is Steven. In Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steven. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I have a problem that's been plaguing my computer for a few months. I'm on the cable internet, and for some reason, I've been having to power cycle my modem like once, twice, you know, even more times a day. Sometimes, you know, I'll have to power cycle like five times within a half hour. Sometimes it'll be like a day or two. But, I mean, it's persistent. It's something that keeps on happening.
How long have you had cable internet?
Probably about 3 months.
Steven, what brand of cable modem is it?
Oh, good. It's just a standard one that came with a package.
There are several of them. You have to look at the front of it and get the brand name.
I'd say call Time Warner and have them replace that box. Yeah, that's the first step.
The Toshiba ones are notorious for that problem.
Yeah. It's not you, it's the box. Get it replaced. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM.
Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And 43 minutes after the hour, we are sound.
My wife made me watch the CMT Music Awards the other night.
Congratulations. Made you should hold a gun to your head.
Your wife made you watch television? I don't think so.
Yeah, right.
She wouldn't give me the remote.
Save a horse, round the cowboy.
Save a horse, watch the MTV Awards. Popular Mechanics says that Macs run Windows Vista better than PCs designed to run the operating system. The magazine published an analysis based on user feedback and performance benchmarks for similarly equipped systems using a number of real-world tests to evaluate the machines. Testers were asked to set up the computers right out of the box and explore the machines through everyday tasks, such as web surfing, document creation, uploading photos, downloading Adobe Acrobat files, playing music and movies through Media Center and Front Row. The magazine said that in both the laptop and desktop showdowns, Apple's computers were the winners. Results were found that both Apple computers ran Vista faster than PCs did. Vista proved to be more sluggish than Leopard. Our PCs installed some software faster, but in general, they were slower in the time trials. Plus, both PCs showed weaker performance on third-party benchmarks. Our biggest surprise, however, the PCs were not the relative bargains we expected them to be. My question is, do Mac people actually want to be known for running Vista well? How is that a good thing?
Now,
look at me. I've sworn off Windows of all flavors and colors.
Which magazine was this one?
Popular Mechanics.
Popular Mechanics, because last December, PC World ran the same testing and said the same thing, that Vista on a Mac is faster than Vista on a PC. And
congratulations, you run Vista better.
And Apple ran some TV commercials
about
it.
Which means he crashes sooner.
Yep. Yeah,
This must be a misprint. It's Apple's misprint commercial where PC calling up the magazine. This must be a misprint that Macs run Vista faster.
Right.
So now we have a second study showing the same thing.
Yeah, well, but I don't know. I would want to be known for running Vista
well,
better.
Well, actually,
it's not really a good thing.
Going backwards, it goes to the fact that Apple uses higher quality components,
right?
Faster chips, bigger cache, And a Macintosh by itself is a higher class computer, no matter what OS you run on it.
Right. Unless you buy a very high-end Windows machine.
Right. It's one of the things I was annoyed about the Popular Mechanics article is they compared the $1,300 Mac against the $1,800 Gateway and were saying, well, yeah, but the Gateway's got a bigger screen. Well, yeah, if they'd have compared it against the $1,800 Mac, it would have had a bigger screen yet.
Right.
They still didn't compare equivalent machines.
Right.
But the Mac still came out better.
Folks wanted us to repeat
it. Go ahead.
All right, again, we hit.
And this is the last time this week, doggone it. You can't write it down.
look at the website.
Yeah. Listen to the podcast.
It's Enright PC, 70 Empire Boulevard.
And Mac Ave at 7716 Victor Menden Road.
And our next caller is Kurt from Brockport, New York. Welcome, Kurt. What's your question?
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I got a desktop machine I'm running Windows 2000 on, and I set up a little network for my home. I've got a laptop that I'm running XP on.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I use my laptop to access network resources, a printer or a shared file or something like that, the laptop, the XP system, makes me log on to the network.
Yeah.
Why? Can security. I get around that?
Yeah, because of security.
Okay. Windows 2000 is really a server operating system.
Okay.
And it has more and better security than a non-server operating mm-hmm. system.
You want to have to log in, which means that anyone driving by your house can't get to your computer without logging in.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I can live with it.
Yeah, that's a feature, not a problem. Believe me.
Yeah. The one way to work around that a little bit is to make the username and password the same on both computers, but that's a dangerous thing.
It might not work anyway. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 47 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, congratulations, everyone. The number of viruses, worms, and Trojans in circulation has topped the 1 million mark. According to Symantec, the number of malicious programs, the malware that security firms' antivirus programs detect, is up to 1,122,311 and counting. And here's the cool part. Almost two-thirds of those were originally detected and created during 2007.
Wow. Woohoo.
Yeah, exactly. It's good to know that people were working hard last year. That's a good thing. All right. Our next caller is Ann from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Ann. What's your question?
Hi. I have a computer that I want to put in a garage sale, and I wanted to know how to make it clean so that nobody has any of my information that was on it.
Format the hard drive.
How do you do that?
Do you have the disks the computer came with?
Yes.
One of the options on that disk is to reinstall the operating system. Erase the hard drive and reinstall it as it came from the factory.
Okay.
There's also a great program, if you're a little more security conscious, called Derek's Bootin'Nuke, where you download this image, and it's actually a Unix distribution, and it reformats your hard drive really, really well so that even people who really want to can't get into it.
Is that on your website?
Yes, it is. Well,
the link to it is, sir.
Give me about 2 seconds and it will be.
And it will be. Now, the other important thing to note is the licensing agreement with Windows, with Microsoft.
No, it already is because my autofill picked up when I started typing it.
The licensing agreement you entered into with Microsoft. If you are planning to continue using the version of Windows that was on that PC on another machine, then you cannot sell it with an operating system on it. If you provide whoever buys the machine with those original CDs and everything else, then it's perfectly legal-ish to sell that operating system with
the
machine.
Yeah, you can't sell the OS and then keep using it yourself.
Right.
So if you got a new computer, it would have to have come with a new version of Windows and a new serial code.
And you have to give the person the CDs and the little hologram tag and all of that stuff.
That's the big thing we run into a lot with used computers is that a lot of people don't have their disks anymore. So what do you do? You have to sell it without an OS and then make whoever buys it buy the new OS.
Right.
Unfortunately, older computers can't run the new OS.
They can all run Linux.
They can all run Linux.
Just fine, thank you. All right, our next caller is Lance from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Lance. What's your question?
My favorite Windows XP Explorer file handler. I used to click on the iPad on the desktop, but it's gone. I deleted a file or something and must remove the desktop icon also. I can still get in through my computer, but not directly with the Explorer icon. How can I get that back?
Is it Windows Explorer or Internet Explorer?
Windows.
When you find it in the My Computer icon, right drag it to the desktop. Hold the right mouse button down while you drag it to the desktop.
Yeah. Not the left mouse button.
Not the left button, the right button. When you release the right button, a menu will pop up and you say, create shortcut here.
Okay.
And then once it's on the desktop, you can move it around to wherever you want it on desktop.
That I do. Thank you.
Actually, there may be a send to desktop. There you go. If you right click on it right in My Computer, there's a send to desktop command, which sends a shortcut to the desktop quicker.
Right. 601.
Either way, yeah.
All right. Our next caller is Ken from Akron, New York. Welcome, Ken. What's your question?
Yes, I've been using the free AVG SpyBot and AdAware.
Right.
And I recently downloaded from AVG the 8 anti-spyware and a virus program.
Yep.
It seems really neat and comprehensive. It also does AdAware too. I was wondering if you guys had any experience with that. And if
it's excellent.
Yep.
And if I could use that as a standalone protection.
Yes, I haven't done enough with the other side of that, but it is a good product, and I'm very impressed with AVG in general, so I suspect that their anti-spyware and all that other stuff is just as good. Yeah.
Although you shouldn't rely on any antivirus, anti-spyware as your only protection. It all comes down to user behavior. Don't click on links in email. Don't go to websites you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't download things from people you don't know.
Right.
In fact, in many cases, don't download things from people you do know because they may be infected and it may not really be coming from them.
Right.
So it's a nasty, nasty world in there, in the internet.
It certainly is.
Yep.
But yeah, I like AVG. I like all their products in general. I'm very impressed with their stuff. So if you like it, and I think you should, go for it.
Well, it's so reliable that even New York State Commission for the Blind recommends it for all their folks statewide.
Yep.
And that's even on into Jersey, New Hampshire, and Vermont. So it's a very good product and very reliable that the State Commission for the Blind will even recommend it, you know, given what those folks have to go through, you know, getting updates and everything else.
Right. All right. That sound means that Rob fell asleep again and his forehead hit the... Oh, no. It means that we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, who's at 70 Empire Bowl, Steve Ray and Chris Reich, and Rob Linton, who once again did a great job keeping us mostly on the straight and somewhat on the narrow as we went through another week of sound bites. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank each of you for listening. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Next week, call earlier and often. Check out our website at soundbites.org. Check out my website at asknick.com. He wasn't listening. It is 58 minutes after the hour. And you have been listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Bye-bye.